Roger Nash of FieldView Solutions is the co-author of a new report from a two-year global research study for the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. The report is entitled Influence on the Ground, Understanding and Strengthening the Protection Impact of United Nations Human Rights Field Presences, and Roger is here in the Global Observatory today to walk us through it. Roger, for a start, does the UN have human rights field presences in many places? How many people are involved, and how many of them did you talk to and where to prepare your report?
The UN has human rights field presences in 58 countries. They vary a lot in their size. Some of them are very big, and some of them are just one or two people. And the total of staff in the field is just over 1,000 people, which sounds like a lot, but when you compare it with some of the other UN agencies, it's far smaller. For our study, we did major case studies in the Congo, in Nepal, Uganda, and Colombia. For the study, we did case studies in Colombia, the DRC, Nepal, and Uganda. We also did smaller visits to about five or six other countries. We did phone interviews with staff in 20 other countries. And all in all, we interviewed around about 400 people. Not all of these people were human rights officers. There was politicians, military officers, police officials. There were a lot of human rights activists and civil society activists in general from all of these countries, because we thought it was very important to get all the different perspectives included.
As a longtime journalist, I associate human rights organizations or offices with reports exposing human rights abuses and programs to monitor behavior to forestall new abuses. But that's not the primary activity you were examining, is it? How does this UN field work you looked at go about achieving protection?
Certainly, monitoring and report writing is a huge part of the work, but we found that it was really just one tool in a more complete package. A lot of the time, we've got used to the concept that human rights work is about documenting cases and denouncing them. But in fact, the work that we saw was far more nuanced. It was goal-oriented. It was really about analyzing a situation on the ground and thinking about all the tools you have at your disposal to influence that situation. Now, monitoring and technical cooperation are the terms that we heard used most often. But in fact, there's a lot of blurring between the two. We found that the terminology that people are used to using is not really accurate anymore, that when you're trying to influence somebody, it's usually a combination of getting good data and using that maybe to pressure them or to try to influence their behavior. But it's also about the relationships you build, the way that you can talk to them so they know what the expectations are of how they're going to be measured. And also that they see you as having a cooperative, constructive relationship with them, where you're not just criticizing, but you're giving them the tools that are going to help them do a better job.
In the mix of activities, what did you find were the most effective strategies? And do you have any examples?
Well, we saw that just by being in the field, it's a whole other ballgame. You have 100 more opportunities to influence people. You don't just get to talk to the high-level people. It's not just broadcast on the international stage. You're meeting at very local levels with human rights activists and giving them encouragement. You're meeting with police who are maybe actually committing abuses. You get the opportunity to interact with so many more people. And this was the key element of the field work, that it's fundamentally different in the means you can have to influence people. And it's not so much one activity or another, but it's the way that you relate all of those things together. For example, just if you have one visit to the field, it might be doing five or six things at once. You might be meeting with a remote community or visiting a human rights activist in a remote area, or just meeting with a police commander. And one single visit might be combining many goals. You might be trying to raise the profile of a particular issue. You might be trying to send a dissuasive message about how the police or the military will be held to account. You might be trying to send encouragement messages, or you might be doing capacity building or any of these things. So we found that the most effective strategies were about putting all the different pieces together in a way that is directed towards achieving a very particular goal.
The UN image in the field, is it an asset or is it a liability?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. That varies a lot. It depends on your image with whom. Certainly, historically, it's normally been a real asset. I've worked in a lot of countries where being the UN certainly gives you a high profile. It means that when you say something, people tend to notice it. But there are certainly many countries around the world today where it's very associated with certain political interests. And this is one of the inevitable challenges with the more integrated missions, where there can be military components, there can be member states that are contributing military forces at the same time. And in those situations, it's very difficult for the UN to be seen as somebody who is outside of these political influences, because actually, in many cases, they're not. So I think it really depends very much on the country that you're talking about.
The report, as I understand it, was commissioned by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. Does that mean that here in the headquarters community of the UN, they are interested in knowing what's happening in the field and to what extent it differs from what's happening here? And if I'm right in describing its purpose, what did you find was the answer to that question?
Yeah, I guess I should make something very clear. This is a report by two people as independent consultants. Now, we had very strong cooperation from the Office of the High Commissioner, and in fact, we had a small amount of funding as well. But the bulk of the funding that we got, we raised directly by member states that were really interested in understanding more completely how the work happens in the field. Now, the support that we got from the office was incredibly valuable, and it was really representing a very genuine interest of the office itself, both to understand and to communicate the mechanics by which it has this impact on the ground to protect people's rights. And we've had a wonderful response from them since we published the book. They've hosted a major event in Geneva where the High Commissioner launched the book, and they've really adopted it very much as a standard of an explanation of what they are doing in the field and trying to use it to, so that especially their donors can understand better the work that they're doing. But having said that, the study is not an official product of the office, and everything in it is really just the opinions of the two of us.
Now, your report makes five recommendations. Is that enough to trigger your memory of what those five are?
Yeah, I actually took the opportunity to jot them down a second ago. So the primary one is something that I've talked about already, that it's really for the office and for the human rights field presences to be very aware of the full toolbox of measures that they have, and to try to communicate that more clearly so that everybody understands that the work in the field doesn't fit into such easy boxes or pigeonholes as monitoring, technical cooperation, and the most effective work is really nuanced combinations of that. The second recommendation we have is that the field presences should very much keep in mind their particular added value as the UN. And that means that they have a particular profile and an ability to say things safely that maybe others don't have. And particularly civil society activists working in these countries may not be able to say things. And if the UN is not able to stand up and make that space for them, it really, in some sense, it calls into question why it's the UN there and not the civil society, because that's the real key value added by the UN in a lot of these situations. Thirdly, we found that a lot of the bigger presences have been started in response to crisis, for example, in the Congo, in Cambodia, in Nepal. And then there's a real question about what should happen in the longer term. Because as these crises change, the presences discover that there's actually longer-term human rights issues underlying the crises. And as the UN, they actually have a responsibility to look at these as well. They can't just say that human rights are just crisis rights. So, but on occasion, that has appeared to almost catch the office by surprise. And they need to be more prepared for what the long-term role is following on from these crises. Fourthly, we think that the work is very effective and particularly very cost-effective. And we would recommend that there's more of it, that it happens in more countries, that there's a greater number of people, more human rights officers working in more countries, because that's the way they're going to have more impact. And then finally, beyond that growth, that organic growth, if you like, we think there should be a really strategic ambitious vision of where this is going in the longer term, to think, well, what does this institution look like? What do these human rights field presences look like? And is it actually the right strategy that they should be, you know, more ad hoc, more and much smaller than some of the other UN agencies? Or is this such a fundamental thing that it could be more more strongly brought into the standard human rights architecture, that everybody understands what these presences are and people don't see it as a badge against their honour or a stain against their honour to have a presence, but instead it's a normal expectation of a member of the international community that you will be engaged at that level.
Roger Nash, thank you so much for discussing this in the Global Observatory.
Thank you very much.